In this episode, my friend Scott and I sit down and we discuss the capital-intensive startup of a business just prior to COVID and the mad scientists of 2005. We had fun and hope you enjoy listening. Welcome to the Banking Life Podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. And you know, if you listen regularly, I am always excited when we have guests that come into the studio. And that is exactly what has occurred today. Scott Stouter has agreed to share his time with us. And so thank you for doing that, Scott. Now, I've known Scott since about 2019, I believe. And salt of the earth gentleman, friends, he's been a client since about 2019. And I'm excited that he's here to share his experience with the Infinite Banking Concept and becoming his own banker. Scott, thanks for coming in. And how are you?
Absolute pleasure. It's great to be here in Alvarado, Texas. Uh-huh. But yeah, like James had said, the process of getting to an IBC lifestyle was a journey. I think everybody could agree with that. Yeah. So, but yeah, the team here, everybody, it's like family.
Well, thank you for saying that. And that's kind of really what I'd like to hear personally is, like, how did you even get exposed to the idea of becoming your own banker, that you could possibly even control the banking function and what that meant, you know, however far back you'd like to go? Please take us and just bring us up to date if you would, sir.
Yeah. So family started restaurant businesses. So the entrepreneurial side of us was always alive and well. When I graduated from Indiana University, moved down to Dallas, you know, sky was the limit. I thought, you know, here I am going to break out of the mold of Indiana and start a new life in Dallas. And, you know, it was remarkable. I got a great opportunity in the orthopedic space. And I remember sitting there running the budget and I was like, man, this income that I'm making it's awesome. And then you start trickling down and you're like, well, okay, maybe I won't have the full package on cable. And so it's humbling to know that you've got to start somewhere. But in that regard, I was like, all right, I'm going to be reading the Wall Street Journal. I'm going to be this financial expert. I'm going to do great things and, you know, be the, you know, early retire. And it just does not always work out that way. I always laugh. I was thinking about this call. It's like my Wall Street Journal subscription showed up at night. Like, so it was almost 12 hours past due on all the other. So I was like, all right, maybe
I'm staying ahead of the curve.
I'm not staying ahead of the curve on this one. But I also was in the back of my mind, there was always something saying, like, you know, to truly invest in something or put your money safely into something, you should really know a lot about it. And the humbling fact is, even the stocks that you'd pick or you buy, you're like, you know, somebody could come up to me on the street and say, hey, I know you invest in company X. Like, who's the CEO? And then you're like, well, I can answer that question. And then CEOs change and whatnot. So it's truly hard to delineate what's going on with each company that you're investing in. And so I was at a function. It was probably, I want to say, maybe a chamber of commerce. And this guy comes up to me with wild hair, kind of looked like Doc Brown. And it was just, and he started telling me about whole life policies. And I was 20 some years old at the time. And, you know, I read Becoming Your Own Banker.
From that conversation,
I read it. I was like, it makes sense. I bought a policy. I don't even remember what the premium was. It was, you know, it was higher than if I would have just done term. And I did it. And because I don't think this podcast, I don't think what everybody was trying to do in communicating, it wasn't out there. So there's all the noise telling me whatever I just did was the wrong thing.
Well, how long ago was that?
If I'm 40, it was over 20 years ago. And so anyways, I got cold feet. I canceled the policy. Mr. Mad Scientist guy was not happy with me. And then I was like, I kind of just shelved it for a while. I did the whole 401k. I was a 1099 for, you know, 80% of my working career. So I was like, you know, yes, I could put a lot of money in my 401k, but at the end of the day, there wasn't that much money to put in. I wasn't getting the match. And so it's kind of like there's just that burning desire to go on. I want to do something that doesn't require me to be an absolute, like, on top of what the company's doing. Are they supporting the things that I'm interested in? And I don't remember where I stumbled across, but I said, Sarah and I were considering starting a franchise. This is pre-COVID.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, orthopedics, I always joke, like, 1 year is normal for people. An ortho rep will age about 8 years for every 1 year that normal people do, just from the stress of the job. So it's like, you know, I can't do this till I'm 70 years old. So we've got to figure out something, hedge our bets and find something else. And
so, okay, the ortho rep, what exactly is that?
So orthopedic sales was, I used to do pretty much, you know, all the joints. And then I kind of graduated towards just doing knee and hip primarily.
So you're selling the actual joints.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Right. So we're supporting the staff and supporting the surgeon. At every step of the way, they can just say, hey, does this combination work? And be like, yes. Yeah. He's like, okay, thanks.
So did you, and I think I know the answer to this, but did you go into the OR with the surgeons while they're?
Yeah, I still do. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I don't think most, I didn't know that at one time, you know, I think it was you.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I've been there all the time.
No. And we're just honestly just another resource. You know, some people can take it the wrong way and think we're doing more than we need to, but really just as a support to the staff to say, hey, how do these parts go together? How do they come apart? Yeah. And so just kind of adding another layer of patient safety.
Sure.
But then also I'm get paid a commission. And so, you know, we always tell ourselves, like, you're one mistake away from not having an income. And so you really do have, there's a lot at stake to make sure you have what the surgeon needs and you're there and you're alert. And so, yeah, so the franchise part was, I'll back up when I was when Sarah and I got married, there was an opportunity at corporate at the company that I was at back in my hometown in Indiana. So my wife is born and raised in San Antonio, and you know, we're in the honeymoon period of our marriage, and this opportunity comes up, and I was like, well, I could be closer to my dad. He's living on a transplanted kidney, and I could be closer to my brothers who live in Indiana as well. And I get there, and it's like two consecutive of the worst winters I can ever imagine. I mean, like, the first day we got there, we woke up to like 10 or 11 inches of snow. Like, I couldn't find my wife's Explorer. My wife goes, where did you move us? And so, you know, I did the corporate thing for about a little over two years, came back to Dallas, and so
put
then
your flip flops on, sunshiny.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but anyway, so, in that move to Indiana, my wife's career kind of didn't translate to Indiana. So then, you know, we have our first daughter. Claire was born in the same hospital I was, which is kind of unique, different OB, but same hospital. So it was kind of a cool story. Fast forward, we're back. And so Sarah's kind of like, you know, I want to get back into the working world. But then you have that little gap. And so, like, any of the single moms or anybody that's out there that's like done the stay at home mom, like, you can talk to my wife, Sarah. She's like, I've been there. And so we really thought, you know, maybe we should look into a franchise. And so this is kind of where IBC kind of came back to it.
So this is 2018.
So we're starting the travel business, and Sarah is the youngest franchise owner in their system. She is a star among their peers. And you know, it's an upward trend. Like, it seemed like it was the right thing to do, pre-COVID. And we were 60% in the cruise business.
Gosh, travel right before COVID.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So we were 60% cruise on our mix. So she pivoted as much as she could and started doing more land-based vacations, like your all-inclusives and whatnot. But yeah, I joked with people, and in an unfunny way, it was like, going to McDonald's and only being able to maybe get a tea. And so it was pretty dire when your government says for 18 months plus, you can't sell your main product. So we had many nights where we're like, this is nuts. But
so y'all coughed up a lot of money.
We coughed up a lot of money. And I would say funding the franchise was really the trigger for IBC. So we had the conversation with the franchise partner who helped us find the right fit for us. And he had talked about Rob's program, the rollover for business startups. And so you basically start a C Corp, you take your 401k and you roll the entire amount into this Rob's program. And it is your business. The only way to really get your money out is to liquidate the business. So you're all in if you do the Rob's. And our financial advisor at the time, who Sarah had known since she was in eighth grade in San Antonio, he talked us out of it and said, you know, why don't we just take the money that you need out of your 401k, satisfy the Small Business Administration's 20% that you need to put up front. They'll fund the rest. Well, that bumped us into a higher tax bracket, and that was a nice large tax. And our guy was, the only response was, hey, I'm not a CPA. But
whoa, that's not funny.
It's not funny.
None of this is funny so far.
And so we,
I mean, you're telling it. I mean, you've like got a great attitude, sir.
So we got the business started. It was not necessarily as easy as if we had been funding our own policies, controlling our own banking function. And I always laugh because if I ever needed even $1,000, I had to give a dissertation on where that $1,000 was going and why I was going to do that. And then I was kind of an argument back and forth, like, why would you do that? And I laugh. The company, the mutual company that I am with via you, if I need money, it's almost a little too easy. Because I just request the money and the check shows up in about a week, and nobody's belittling what you're trying to do, or you're not telling them I'm not getting a face tattoo. Like, you don't have to.
Who are you having this dissertation with? Who's this argument?
A financial advisor.
Okay. Us?
Yeah. So
the one that's not a tax, I'm not a CPA.
Yeah. And he's brilliant. I have nothing
I'm not
bad.
I'm not.
But also that one of those things is, you know, you really don't need.
It's like you're paying another gatekeeper.
Yes.
Between you and your capital.
Yes.
Yeah. He's like your alter ego. Do you really need that?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, sometimes we all do stupid things, sure. but at the same time, it's like you really want to be able to borrow $5,000 and not really have to explain what you're planning on doing with it.
If I could just interrupt, you will never ever hear me question you on what you want to do with your capital.
Yeah.
Ever. And now, if you ask me my opinion, I'll give it to you. Right.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to, what? I didn't know face tattoos cost that much. Okay. Sorry.
But yeah. So, I will say for everybody listening, that is 100% that you do not get a call from James going, what's this money for?
What's the loan balance?
Yeah.
Are you making loan repayments?
Yes. My 20-year-old self, I kind of kicked my 20-year-old self for not continuing the IBC journey.
With the mad scientist. You fell prey to the noise, you feel like.
I fell prey to the noise.
Okay.
And because there's just so much. This was probably a well-structured, if I had to guess. This was not a, you know, VUL. It was not indexed. It was, you know, high cash value mutual company. So he was, in all intents and purposes, probably set me up with the policy that I would have been very happy to still have in force.
Yeah. You'd have 15 years roughly experience.
Yeah.
Right.
But it was the noise. And I think that's what's so reassuring about this podcast, the resources that y'all are trying to put out there, is just say there's a lot to the story that isn't being told.
Yeah.
So we had the business, it was going, supporting my wife, and I'm like, let's go. And then COVID happened. I burnt some more cash because I thought the first wave was over. Mm-hmm. We had an older gentleman that we were leasing the space from. He was like, y'all, I know it's a black swan event. He was like, I'm not holding you to your security deposit. He's like, I can get this place rented out tomorrow. He's like, y'all have been great. So he let us get out of the lease. Mm-hmm. Well, that first wave kind of dips. And I said, we've got to get going before commercial space goes up again. Like, now is the time to get back. And so we opened up our second location, which was our primary location now. So we did not have the other one. That landlord was great, did all the build out. Was a great space, kind of improved on what we were doing. And then we had the second and third wave, and just cash was just flying out of our account. And we were still booking vacations, but it was just the income stream was not there. And so at some point we did finally hold out. There was a Frisco location who was 5 years ahead of us and doing pretty well, had a good book of business. So we just took our team and merged with them. And I was like, had that been an option a year prior, that would have been really financially advantageous. But it's, we're past that point. But so fast forward, I get turned on to your podcast, reach out to your team, and I'm like, I'm all in. Let's go. And I would also say the other resources, I brought the stack of books that I felt like Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, is number one. And I almost feel like kind of don't want to write a policy without having the person read that. But I would say the other ones are The Warehouse of Wealth, Privatized Banking, How It Works, and The Case for IBC. I think, honestly, if you don't read those four books before, you might just be that 23-year-old, 22-year-old Scott that gets a policy 6 months later, freaks out, cancels it, and you're kicking yourself 15 years later that you didn't keep it in force.
I agree that, you know, if your agent advisor hasn't read Nelson's book and knows it, in my opinion, rather intimately, I don't really believe that you can even talk about the infinite banking concept or becoming your own banker without having read that with any authority or any knowledge. I mean, so I agree. I mean, and those are really required readings, you know, as far as I'm concerned. Nelson, Becoming Your Own Banker, second book, Building Warehouse Wealth, How Privatized Banking Really Works. I skipped that other one, and, you know, it's Becoming Your Own Banker, Building a Warehouse of Wealth, and How Privatized Banking Really Works. And then Ryan Griggs, his book is in print, but it's not yet ready for delivery. But here, this is February 2025, so it's just a matter of weeks before he has his platform available to deliver his book, How to Buy Whole Life.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
That'll be a companion book to this, Becoming Your Own Banker. And without that solid foundation, and then I have other readings, you know, and things that, I mean, I believe the Banking with Life DVD is still legitimate, mm-hmm. even though it has some age on it. And Nelson's 6.5-hour video himself, you know, walking through the book is exactly what he did. Without that foundation, you're not really practicing infinite banking to the level that you could or should. And you're probably not building the best foundation, i.e. the best policy structure designed for you and your family, wherever you are at. I mean, personally, it's customized, built, you know, tailored to you. But if you are doing that, if you do have this foundational material, which is exactly what it is, foundational material, right? If you have the proper foundation, you can build whatever structure on top of that you want. So I agree with you.
Yeah. And I think the things too that we learned through the startup of the franchise was, you know, even with just the 401k, you know, I still at my company, I still just do the match. And then my philosophy right now where I'm at is that match is basically going to pay the taxes when I take my money out. So thank you for paying the tax. Because we won't know. We don't know what the tax will be in the future. But I will say that any access to your money should not be as arduous as we were experiencing, as well as, I mean, you say it often, we did not need the tax code. And then the tax code came, and then therefore we needed something like the 401k to offset the reality of what the tax code brought. So if I can only access my money penalty-free for, what, 20% of my life, it doesn't seem like that great of a place. And now,
especially when you're 20, 30,
yeah,
40.
Yeah. And plus, I mean, if you're really bad with money, maybe that's good that you can't have access to it. But if you have opportunities and they do show up when you have money, you can't really exercise them without getting a very large tax bill.
I mean, if you, and I agree. So if you're not very good with money and you don't have discipline, there are people out there that can help you with budgeting, right?
Yep.
And maybe some people out there that can help you with discipline. I don't have any extra discipline. You know, I need all I have. So I don't think I can help someone with discipline other than putting, you know, together a solid plan going forward. And then if they have the discipline to, you know, pay the premium, make the loan repayments, you know, and that's not hard. You can develop discipline, but if you don't have any, it doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, kind of going back, it's like, and so in 2005, you know, the mad scientist must have been a great guy for you to, you know, buy the book and then go all in, you know, start a policy and then fall prey to the noise. And look, the noise is real. There's a reason that I harp on the noise regularly, because it's real and it has an effect, and it's not positive, in my opinion.
Right.
You know, if it knocks you off track and anyway, but then, you know, and then y'all experience, you know, you're a high income profession. Would that be fair to say, the orthopedic rep?
Yeah.
And you had all that money, and then at the end of the day, you're like, what? But, okay, so then you started business, and probably I couldn't imagine any worse timing starting a travel business that you didn't go with the Rob idea, right, because of the illiquidity and the capital tied to the business.
Yep.
But then, so you didn't do that. And you got the gatekeeper that you're paying. It's like, hey, what about the $1,000 face tattoo? What are you doing with this money? What are you doing with that money? But let's take it out of the 401k. So you make a withdrawal.
Yep.
And the taxes are the taxes. You're going to pay taxes anyway. So that was taxable. Bumped you into a higher tax bracket. Plus you paid the 10%. Yep. Then you put that capital into a travel business. Franchise that cost a ton of money. I don't know how much, but it cost a lot of money. And then COVID hits. It's like, I mean, most people are tapping out right there.
Yeah.
I mean, if they don't tap out, they're going to get shoved out. I mean, that's pretty heavy. That's,
Now we had some awful many consecutive sleepless nights. I mean, remember when the first wave hit, and I think Sarah, in probably a 1 week's time, canceled over $1 million worth of travel. But I would say also that a plug for travel agents, the folks that went with the discount, they were on the phone for 8-9 hours trying to cancel. And Sarah was just an email or a phone call, and she got to work. Mm. And so I think the people that were clients with Sarah and her agents just appreciated the fact that it was easy, and, you know, it was painful, but they made it as easy as possible to get out of the vacation that nobody was going to go on. I mean, even if you showed up at the port, the boat wasn't going to be, it was the government mandated that it was not safe to safe to cruise.
You're such a gentleman. The government mandated that it's not safe to go on a cruise.
Yes.
You're such a gentleman, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be 2020, 2021, 2022,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you're here. You didn't die. Thank God.
Yep.
You know, so do you want to share about the recovery or what's happened since? Or
right. So the recovery process was, so Sarah and her agents had met, they would merge with the Frisco location. So she didn't have access to what her agents were booking. But she didn't have to go to the office anymore. Like she was able to, it freed her up a little bit, but she at the same time was like, I'm passionate about travel. I know that what we were doing was in the right direction. And so fast forward, she's now working for Norwegian Cruise Lines.
Okay.
And she's got her dream job. And I think because we were working with our suppliers, that her Norwegian rep is now her boss. And so there's blessings in everywhere you look.
Sure.
Was it painful financially? Yes. But there's absolutely blessings, because if she would have moved from Indiana and gone, said, hey, I want to go after this Norwegian job, they'd say, Sarah, who? But because there was a working relationship and that Sarah was producing before COVID, that they knew that, you know, let's put her on the team. And so those are the blessings. The other things is I'm in ortho, still doing what I'm doing. It's nice to know that I'm putting stuff into a process that, because of what happened with COVID, maybe it's not going to be for me, but it may tip the scales for generational wealth, which my girls at 10 and 8, they don't care. There's birthday money is birthday right. money. And I think later on in life, they're going to be so happy with what Sarah and I are doing for them. Because, I mean, I think Sammy was like, she's four or five years into her policy. So she was four. And it's a non-medical. So it's not as, you know, it's a lot more term. But at the same time, if they carry it on till they're 70, it was going to be a blast. It's like, why would you not pay a premium?
Yeah. Those are beautiful policies on children. And the reason, my humble opinion, is because they will be the oldest policies, you know, and the longer a policy is in existence, the better it gets every year.
It's more efficient.
Yeah. And so that policy and your children naturally are going to outlive us.
And we had to get over the hump, because I'm sure there's people out there that would be like, well, why would you want so much life insurance on your kids? Yeah. Like, that kind of seems icky. And I'm like, trust me, if I lost one of my kids, I would need $500,000 worth of psychological help, because it would just be, you know, you're talking maybe move into a different house, just like it, there's a lot that, you know, I don't know how I'd navigate it one moment at a time, but yeah, I don't feel icky at all having life insurance out on my kids.
Yeah, and I hope you, me, the listener never has to experience that. I don't know that I could recover.
Yeah.
And money wouldn't move the needle one iota, whether mm-hmm. I recovered or not. And I would, like you, probably need $1 million worth of psych help, you know? And I do know that there's that, I understand that there's kind of that, you know, thought. It's like, why would you insure a child? Well, you're not really insuring them for the death benefit, number one.
Right.
Has a honking death benefit because you're trying to get a lot of premium in there. But what those policies do over any kind of a time period, right? I mean, you got it 10, 15 years. If she was at four, I mean, she's going to go to college here in another, if she's eight now, right? That policy is going to be 15, 20 years old by the time she goes to college. I bet she'll want to drive a car before she gets there.
Yep.
Yeah. Maybe, and I don't know, maybe there's some ortho, dental work, whatever. That stuff costs money.
And I won't have to ask or give a dissertation on what vehicle I'm buying and
or sign
how,
up.
How I should conveniently finance it.
Or, you're in the dental chair, and look, no disparagement to the dentist or docs, no disparagement. But you're in the back, you know, they've got you leaned back in the dental chair, and look, me and dental work go back a long way. And they, while you're leaned back, they put in front of you, here, how are you going to pay for that? Well, here's a fabulous financing plan.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, generational wealth.
I'm sure that doesn't happen. It's just me sharing an analogy that I can envision, okay?
Yeah, but I think there's a freedom to having access to capital and having control with that banking function. And I think... when you first start out, it's a leap of faith. But I've already, the way you structured the policies, like year one was, that was easy to make that policy premium. It's like you make the policy premium payment and then you got to wait for a month, but then you can check and there, sure enough, you have access to it. I think if it wasn't COVID and we didn't have immediate need for capital, I would encourage anybody that's starting out is just let that cash value grow for a while. I would say leave it be, let it grow for a little while. Don't get super creative on what you can do with it. It's just kind of like that farmer that plants a seed and then wants to harvest it the next day. It's like, that's not a great farmer.
There's nothing stable about that, is there? Mm-hmm. And I would think that you could clearly see that because you had to leverage up pretty good. You know, starting a bit, pulling the capital. I'm not saying you borrowed a lot of money, but you did mention SBA. Did
yes.
you do an SBA loan?
Yes.
Okay, so you're liquidating assets that you've accumulated in these qualified accounts. There's some cost to doing that sooner than, you know, age 59 and a half. That rightly so, you would believe you'd overcome those costs, mm-hmm. right? It's taxable anyway, so you did that. And then, you know, have borrowing money, you know, from the SBA, and then it's a new industry. I mean, that wasn't her industry, was it, Sarah's, mm-hmm. when she did? So it's a new industry. There's a learning curve there, even though she's knocking it out of the park, go get her. And then COVID hits. I mean, when did it really... that had to have solidified your thinking, you know, meeting the mad scientist at 2005, buying the book, buying the policies, coming to the noise, and then, you know, changing careers. I mean, that would have bothered me, I guess, thinking if I'd been exposed to the banking, I've gotten started,
right.
you know, but then I want to do these things before I can fully maybe properly capitalize the policy to finance these things. So I'm still beholden to a third party lender. And then there's even a workout, you know, you can use the third party lender's money if you can, in my opinion, if you can maintain the leverage, control of the leverage, right? Because you can always buy them out and tell them to go packing if you're doing things right. But that would have bothered me if I were in your shoes, knowing what I know about the infinite banking concept,
right.
you know, and going through that. What did that do for you? I mean, it would have bothered me and it would have solidified, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it would have solidified to me that, oh my gosh, I need to pile money into life insurance policies.
Yeah.
But
we did. We were turning over every stone we could to just funnel. And you know, it goes back to the whole thing. Don't be afraid to capitalize your policies. However, you know, money was cheap during COVID. And so in reality is if you can be disciplined and find entrepreneurial ways to capitalize that, I would say do that first, because you are still beholden to the third party lenders by borrowing from them. But I'm at the point where I'm starting to see the small things, like my next vehicle, I don't have to go to the finance department, or I can go and see, kind of peer behind the curtain and see what rate they'll give me and what the payment would be like. And at the very last minute, kind of say, no, I'll just go ahead and do it, because I know I can control that. And I say that because we haven't had to experience, Sarah and I have not had to experience a loan being called. But they always have that option. They can always just say, hey, Mr. So-and-so, your brand new Toyota, we want it paid in full. And with banking with life, having years built up, we're starting to get to the point where it's like, okay,
yeah,
it's going to be unfortunate, but yeah, you're not putting my truck on a flatbed and driving off with it. Right. We can square up.
Yeah. Most of the loans I see that are recalled or called, you know, and lines of credit are closed or reduced first, then closed, and then they turn that into a time note. Oh, you have a $100,000 line of credit. Your balance is 25. That's your new limit. And then either then or later or not, but very highly possible. As a matter of fact, we're going to close that. You've got 30 days to pay that $25,000. Oh, you can't pay it? No problem. At the end of the 30 days here, we'll just turn that into a 24, 36-month note.
Yep.
That is callable. You know, they controlled it the whole way. And then real estate deals. I've seen lots of, you know, bridge loans, different things. They get called, closed, more so than mortgages, you know, primary resident mortgages and automobiles, but they absolutely have the right. And I know there are, you know, non-recourse loans available. I know, but you don't own any, and neither do I.
Yeah.
And anyway, and they're quite heavily, I'll stop.
Yeah.
They exist.
And I think the hard part for us in our learning curve is if no fault to the SBA, but if SBA would ever be brought up again in our vernacular, I would say it's not a business I want to go into, because it did start off and we knew the trick was the SBA will extend the repayment much further than a commercial lender would. So that's nice. They give you a little bit more time to pay, but they give you really no argument on the variable rate.
Yeah.
So we started off at a cool like 3.5%. When right before we paid the full amount off, by God's grace, we were at 9.10%.
Oh, that's about 300% increase.
After our beloved government has said for 18 months that you cannot sell your major product whatsoever. So yeah, it was painful. We've seen a perspective that I don't think I really want. I'm not that much of a evil person. I don't want people to have to go through it, but
sure.
I think that paints a good picture for everybody else is that, you know, you can have a thing start off really well, but they're going to get their money.
Absolutely.
And if you can control that, even if a small portion of it, you just sleep better.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to beat them up or, you know, right, wrong, indifferent the way it is. They're going to tell you on what schedule you're going to spend those proceeds. They're going to control and hold you to the deal, really. You're borrowing money for this. You're not spending that money on anything other than that deal. And they're going to tell you, they're just going to control that as well.
Yep.
So this is 2025. So Sarah's working at Norwegian, knocking it out of the park. You're still the orthopedic rep, right?
Right.
And so things are going much better.
Yes.
I would assume.
Yes. Much right. better. I think we joke we need a couple more years still to get back to even from all that, but yeah, we've been working at it, just enjoying the. I'm enjoying logging in and checking my policies now, and I didn't feel bad because the second annual live event when you had who was it, the guy that from Lafayette Life?
That was Larry Silverstein.
Yes, Larry Silverstein. He goes, I used to check it like on a daily basis. I was like, thank goodness. I'm not crazy. But you can always see it go up and just knowing that it's guaranteed by contract.
Yeah.
If you have a down year, no one really does the math because they don't want to of how much you probably have to double your next year to get back to where you were. And I think the guaranteed by contract portion, I mean, you're so much further down the Pinewood Derby track.
You're talking about like in the market if you have a down
year? Yeah. So if you're,
if you lose 50, you know, if you're at 100, you lose 50%. I'm using now round numbers for me. You're at 50,000. You have to make 100% just to get back to where you were.
Yeah.
Not 50. You know, if I lose 50, I'll make 50. You're still behind. You got to make 100%. In my example, you always have to gain much more than you lost.
Yep.
And so you have that up and down. Yeah, I know the market's only going to go one way. I get it. You know, Einbahnstrasse. And let's say that's true. What timeline? Where does your timeline in your endeavors, right, and the things that you want to do, the businesses that you go in, the things that you want to purchase, you know, how much leverage you want to take? Where does all that fit into that upward trend of the market? And then, you have the boom bust cycle in the economy. Put that on there. You know, you start adding real life to these charts.
Yep.
It makes a huge difference.
And if you don't, if you're not aware of the assets under management effect to your money, you're behind the eight ball. Because even at a 1% assets under management, I think the noise too, and some of the personalities that are out there that get so upset about life insurance salespeople, professionals getting a commission, said, I get paid a commission. Like it's how it's structured. But I'm like, if you factored in the average American's 401k, if they were getting a 1% asset under management, that is so much more than a commission to someone that's protecting more than just your finances.
You know, if you think, and I completely agree, if you think about that, you take the, and I'm not a stockbroker, you know, I'm an investment advisor, you know, assets under management, get paid fees, not commissions. I get paid commissions on guaranteed products. Mm-hmm. Go figure. I get paid fees on products that are not guaranteed.
Yeah.
Right. And that's how I get paid. And you call it remuneration, call it 1099, W-2, bonuses. We all get paid.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, because it's a commission, that's a bad thing. Well, that's a choice that if you want to make that choice, perfect. I'm not. If I need a joint replacement, I promise I'll reach out to you and a physician, of course, too. But it's like, I'd rather have somebody who knows about joint. I don't care how you get paid, but please get paid so you can show up and be there.
Yeah.
You know, but if you look at the stock market, if you go back in time, the stockbroker got paid commissions, you know, and he'd have his clientele and he'd call them. It's like, and he knew what they wanted to do. He knew their financial situation. And it wasn't just like a one-time wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, you're selling something and you're buying something and it's done. No, they built relationships with their clients. And I'm not a water boy for the stock market or the stock brokers, but they are professional stock brokers, right? They knew you.
Yep.
They understood you and they knew what would be a match for you, whatever the stock was. So they call you up, you know, on 100 shares or you should consider buying this or that or whatever. He got paid a commission and it was done until another thing come up or he might call and say, you need to sell this and buy this. It was a commission relationship. No, that's how he was paid, a commission. And so now that's because commissions are bad. It's moved away from that model.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Commissions are bad. Stockbrokers are bad because they get paid commissions. It's moved away from that model to now what's called asset gathering, assets under management. So I just, you know, have a relationship with you. I understand what you want to do and where you want to go. And so now if you put $1 million with me and I get paid 1%, I'm going to make so much more money than that commission stockbroker. Right? And now we're just going to set it and forget it. We got a managed portfolio. You just put your money in there. I'm going to get paid my asset under management fee, whatever it is. And let's just leave it alone.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the best outcome for every investor. It is not the best outcome for every investor, in my opinion. It is okay to, you know, have that stockbroker relationship if you want to invest in the market and you want to rely on someone else's expertise and on different stocks. I don't, but it really kind of boiled down to me that commissions was, it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'll go pay twice as much over the course of this relationship, but he's not getting a commission. He's getting a fee.
Right.
But I'm paying twice the fees than commissions. I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, who wins in that deal?
Yeah.
Wasn't the consumer, wasn't the client.
And it's the snowball slowly melting. You know, the snowball would be larger. And so, yes, if you're going to do a policy, you're going to pay in that policy premium a commission. But I don't have an issue with it because I'm seeing what I expected to be seeing. Yeah. And every year it does get better. So I'm 5 years in. I cannot wait till the seven-year pay is over.
Wow, what's going to happen?
It's the first milestone for me. So.
Okay.
But yeah, it kind of tells me how much I can put in.
You're still not in the peak earning years of your career.
Right.
In the seventh year of your policy.
Yeah.
You know, so that I was just, thanks for sharing. It's just a milestone.
Yeah, it's just a milestone. So yeah. Girls will be 1 year behind us, but yeah. And then Sarah's second policy was, you know, same time as the girls. So
I got to ask if, you know, we met in 2019, here we go for 2020, 2022. Did you, and you don't have to disclose anything you don't want to. I don't want to put you on the spot, put any words in your mouth. But what did you do with those policies during all of this? That was a rough season. What can I ask?
Kept my house, kept all the things. The household was running, because it wasn't that I wasn't making an income outside of the travel business. It was kind of our lifeline. It just kind of kept you from having to, you know, ask friends and ask family. And
you didn't have to burn them down and start over.
Mm-mm.
Right?
Nope.
I like that.
It was scary, though. Oh. I think one of the things we had to do is move the premium to its lowest point. But then, you know, we were still able to put LPUA into the policy if we had some extra money. So yeah, there's the function of, you know, every day is a good day to pay a premium. But if, let's say, I love Nelson, some of his examples are $40,000 commission. Our premium payment, ours were not in the $40,000, but if it was 40 and you could move it down to 20 or 15 in those lean years, your policy's still in force. You're still getting some benefit from it. And then if you can get caught back up within a year, still.
You did?
Yeah, still catch up. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's important. And in the way we structure policies, you know, just in our practice is very purposeful. You know, it's intentional. It's not just like, oh, this ratio is good and it's good for all. No, it's very intentional. So you were able to lower the premium, and then you were able to raise the premium back up. Have you caught premiums back up that you've lowered before? And
we have not moved those up yet. Now it's just attacking the policy loans. Okay. And for a while, I talked with Jake just early, a couple weeks ago. From the philosophy was premiums first. Yep. Like, find whatever you have to do. If you have to sell a bike,
and you did that.
Yeah.
Even though you had to lower them, you did that.
Yep. So premiums first, keep that in force. All that hard work would be for nothing. The second thing was always putting as much as you could in the LPUA. And then it was kind of like the dollars into LPUA and pennies into policy loans. But at some point, though, you know, not having any policy loans outstanding is a Sarah and Scott goal. So we have, for the first year, kind of not maxed out LPUA and focusing on paying down the policy loans.
Is there anything wrong with that? Could we call Sarah now? And not going to, but I mean, just think about, I mean, just think that through. Is there anything wrong with that?
You're giving up a little bit of the dividend growth within the LPUA by not putting that in there. But I would say from peace of mind, having access down the road, I think having those policy loans paid off would barely be the most. And I think it's also those policy loans kind of are a reminder of what we went through. So I think there's some psychological benefit to off, you know, offsetting the LPUA for a little while and focus on policy.
I've done that personally. Early on, I've done that and psychological, you know, I'm looking at a debt, you know, yes. And I don't, align with the philosophy that, oh, you can borrow all the cash value you want and you never have to pay it back. When that comes out of someone's mouth, you need to swipe left, right? Or yeah. Keep scrolling, right? But, I mean, I've been right. In that position where, you know, you paid as much premium as you possibly could. And for whatever, you're either going into a business, expanding, whatever it is you're doing, you need that capital. So you collateralize the cash value. Now you've got all these great big outstanding loans. Yeah. Right. And it's very uncomfortable. And, you know, you've got to do what's right for you.
Yeah.
Right.
But they grow at the rate that you expect. Because from my standpoint, it's a very easy math policy loan. Like, you know, if you blow it off at the end of the year, it's going to be probably at this number. So there's no like, hidden, you don't need a scientific calculator to figure out how much it's going to balloon to within a calendar year.
Yeah, there's no balloon payments.
No balloon payments.
There's no, the interest rates can move and they do move, but not like 300%, you know, from the SBA. And so, you know, you've lowered the PUA premium. That's because that's what you can move up and down is the PUA premium. So you move that down to the minimums or whatever. The banker gets to do whatever they want. That is so powerful. And it's so true. And this is just an application of that.
Yeah.
And so you got suddenly uncomfortable, or maybe over time, you're uncomfortable with the outstanding loans. So the cash flow that was a premium to the LPUA is now more concentrated. There's still some going to the LPA, I'd assume. Yeah. And then now, but the lion's share of that cash flow is to the loan repayment. So if you, and I shouldn't be asking you personal questions anyway, but as the loan goes down, this is what happened in my case.
Yeah.
Okay. I had just about as much outstanding in loans as I could have outstanding in loans. And it was in 2008. We just purchased a property, just financed the down payment from policy loans, third party lender for the rest of the purchase. And then we financed the remodeling of that through policy loans. The market crashes. Yeah. I think it was 2008 and 2009. And all of a sudden I became extremely uncomfortable having 90% of my policy cash values collateralized.
Right.
And so I did exactly what you and Sarah are doing, right? I'm like, oh my gosh, all of that premium is now going to go to a loan repayment. And we did that for several years. And then we looked back and then raised our premium back up and started doing catch up premiums. And after several years, all of that was a very valuable learning lesson for me, seriously. But looking back after a couple of years, I'm like, oh, everything worked out just fine anyway. And I could have done either thing. But for comfort, that was the right thing for us to do at the time.
Right.
It was to focus on the loans.
Yeah. So. And I give Jake, your son, credit too, because he kind of helped. Because you want to make sure, like, you know, you want to be this darling of IBC and, you know, do all this, you know, pat on the back, I'm doing all the right things. And he said, no, I think for peace of mind, you and Sarah just focus on policy loans. Cause it is like, that was money that kind of kept us afloat while we were navigating the waters of COVID. And yeah, I think when those are paid off, then you kind of don't have that. You kind of get to say bye. That was a chapter. So yeah, I agree with folks trying to figure out that whatever works for you personally, and know that, you know, policy is still getting more efficient as time goes on.
So looking back, and would you have done things different knowing, you know, looking back, you would have known COVID was coming, you know, would you have postponed buying life insurance, permanent life insurance cash value, and or, you know, would you have done anything different?
I think I wouldn't have done anything different other than I would, you know, go back to that 20-year-old and say, he might be an interesting character, but this, there's some validity to this, and you're going to be glad that you did this. And I also, you know, kind of harp on the whole term, buy term and invest the rest. And, you know, my little soapbox that I always tell people whenever they say that is, I said, I think only 1% of term gets paid out before it expires. And then when you have a 20-year term, you're 20 years less healthy and, you know, more comorbidities, and, you know, just life happens. It's like, well, now it's a little expensive to re-up the term. And, you know, for there is term in your structured policies for the death benefit. But it's going to be okay if it's.
Yeah, your 20-year term expired, or 30-year term, and you just had four joints replaced. You're going to be table rated.
Or you end up dying like 2 days after the policy. I know the premiums on terms is very low, but I'd rather just capture all of that within the same policy. And, yeah, and just.
That's really, I mean, of course, it's not funny, but, you know, I've seen many times where people died within a year, year and a half, 2 years of term running out, and they could have, you know, just paid the higher premium, yep, and kept it going, and they chose not to. And it's that's not pleasant to have to work through.
And I think the financial experts on Wall Street would also say, well, you've invested the rest, your family is still under that death tax,
yep,
unless you've, you know, invested so well that you're beyond whatever limit that the death tax now gets enforced. But I'm like, the whole life, the death benefit is just, it's there. Even at 20 years and 1 week, it's there and is tax-free. So yeah, if you're out there and you're killing it and you have now reached that threshold that moves every year of, you know, if you have this many millions, then you have to pay the death tax. I just wouldn't even need to navigate that conversation.
And we can, you know, I've talked about it and can talk about it, but, you know, it's most people today don't, I mean, ordinary people, right? There are a lot of people that have a lot of problems and a lot of people that have estate tax problems. But most people don't have an estate tax problem. Even if they own a tremendous amount of life insurance, the way life insurance counts into the estate valuation. But if they did, it's such an easy, mm-hmm, fix. It's not that big a deal. But, you know, when people want to and they buy term and invest the difference, most of the time they're just parroting something that they've heard that sounds good, makes sense at that very shallow surface level. Do they really invest the difference, you know, and what is the outcome of that?
Right.
You know, life insurance comes with the regular premium, right? You know it's coming. You know exactly how much premium you paid last year.
Yep.
You know, it's the investment company is not going to send you a coupon to make an investment. They're not even going to send you an email. Say, right, here, it's time to make another investment. You know, yeah, you can have it automatically deducted from your payroll and all of that. I get that. You can set it up as an automatic withdrawal from, you know, a checking account. I get that. But it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, I got a premium due.
Yeah. I always joke. I joke with Jake. It's like, man, the only thing I'd do differently is not open up two policies in December. Because even though every day is a good day to pay a premium, it always just makes Stouter Household Christmas or we're writing some really big checks and then also buying Christmas presents. So it's hysterical. It's good in January when everything gets calculated, but it was funny. I was like, man, I probably don't do a December 20th premium payment.
It's absolutely okay to stagger premium due dates. You know, my birthday's in June.
Yeah.
So you have no idea how many policies I bought that I backdated to save age. So they're due in June. And then I bought them and backdated to December to save age, right? Because my birthday's in June. We have, you know, the Nethery household is akin to the Stouter household in December and in June.
You know, when it's hot and when it's supposed to be cold, we're writing some big checks.
Yeah. So do you feel like you've recovered or y'all are well on, I might have already asked that, well on the way to recovering? Things are not burning down like it was.
No,
things are going much better.
I would think we feel like we're halfway there. Because there were some really big numbers to buy out the SBA was a big check.
Yeah.
But there was the relief of knowing that chapter is past us. Because, right. I mean, either 10% penalty for touching money before 59 and a half. They always call it a penalty, but it's really just a charge is how you look at it. Because, I mean, if you didn't do the SBA and just went out and got a regular commercial loan about the same time, it's pretty much the same. I have an 850 credit score and just like that was what it was, versus calling up the life insurance company and saying, you know, I've got payroll, I've got, you know, I'm short 1,000 or 2,000. It's easy. And then
can I ask how you made that SBA loan go away?
There's some policy loans. At 5% was better than 10%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
I would think it was. I mean, if their SBA loan's going to 9, 10.
Yeah.
And it's like at this point in time, and then you had access to capital that you didn't have to cough up 2 years of tax returns and listen to questioning of what you're doing with the money or doing anything, but instructing the life insurance company to send you a check. That's pretty dang powerful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You just brought up, you picked at that scab of going,
sorry,
just know how much you have to provide. The granular, I mean, when we were in the process of it, it was kind of like some people when they're buying a house and getting a third party. But it was just like, hey, we just noticed that there's some money in your account. I mean, we would have to write to the SBA and say, Scott was given, he was paid his commission for the month. Okay, great. Thank you.
No way.
Yeah. To say, hey, and it was before it was funded. They wanted to track every dollar in and out. And so that's pretty invasive, if you ask me. And I get it. They're offering you this opportunity for the American dream to be in bed with the SBA
they can
for a certain amount of number. Yeah. And so they can pretty much ask whatever they want. I guess the ask was kind of another reason. It's like, I'm motivated not to get asked what I'm doing with it. IBC's been great in that regard.
Perfect. So what does the future look like?
Just once we get back to where we feel like we're square one, and we run the numbers for the need for death benefit, we have a convertible term policy with you that, you know, we could look at making that a banking policy. And with Sarah's income, you know, being very consistent now, and, you know, she doesn't, the girls are on me, and so I'm standard. I don't can get it all in that whole standard and super preferred.
Oh, Sarah, like your wife getting preferred.
Yeah,
getting
she's standard. Super preferred. And, but Jake's like, it's really only like a couple, you know, 40 or 50 bucks or so. It's like, you shouldn't lose sleep over, you know, don't wake up and, you know, James and I are standard. I was like, we should have worked harder at life. And, but no, Sarah's super preferred. So that would be, great to have her have some non-medical policies on the girls that are hers and that she's, you know, growing them, because the need for capital is just, we just never know what the future holds. So
it's going to be full of needs too. I was just having that conversation this morning with a lady, and when I buy life insurance, it's standard, and then they feel the need to justify why they approved me standard, and it's always in parentheses, build, which I appreciate them being nice and not calling me fat, but
yep.
Build. You don't have to justify it. Just give me the policy.
Yes.
No justification needed, and thanks for issuing it, you know? I mean, build.
That's great. So, yeah. But yeah, I think that's what matters to us, is being able to do things that we want to do with the girls. And also, I just joke, if the girls think dad's crazy, or maybe I'm their mad scientist, in terms of, as long as they pay their premium, when they're 60 or 70 and they pay their little $3,000 premium and then they get $20,000 back. Like, I was like, I'm sure trips to Europe will be astronomically more expensive, but it's almost like the policies, whether they believe in IBC or not, I hope they do, that's their vacation budget. And I've just set them up for, I mean, that's the bare minimum that they could look at it as.
Yeah. So. I mean, to their mom in the travel industry, it's like just the, and it costs a lot of money to travel, you know. I mean, we like to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefit of that is almost innumerable. You can't even, just barely even measurable. You know, I mentioned many times, you know, the first time we ever went to Europe, my wife and I, and she's asking, James, what is that going to cost? And I literally didn't know, which, you know. Yeah. Oh, to answer your wife. Well, I don't know. Yeah, that really checks the boxes, right? But when we got back, and you know, and then you can, of course, you can calculate to the penny exactly what you spent. Right. Here's what it cost. The question is, what was it worth?
Yeah.
You know, and it's so much greater than the cost traveling. That's what it has done for me and my family, our children.
Yeah. No, I always joke, I still have the bucket list idea of going at some point, either going on a cruise or doing a Europe vacation with the Netherese, because y'all are so much fun, and I don't think people get to see that portion of the in the podcast. But
I'm really a fun guy.
Yeah. So, but no, we're excited to see what the future holds. But yeah, there's no point where I'm like, I don't want to do another policy. Like I've
yeah.
So it's just, you know, if we can fund it and hopefully max it out, then I would be on board for doing more.
Yep. Whenever it makes sense. I love it. And you should, in my opinion. I think, you know, once you put your hand to the plow and, you know, you're paying premium, you're putting your money that you earn from God-given abilities and talents and time away from your family and things that you love, you know, you're creating this money. I mean, we all want to do the right thing, of course, but when you start paying a premium, I mean, your interest level goes up to the point where you may check your policy values every day and watch those numbers move, which that's a whole, we could mm-hmm. do a whole podcast on this. Like, why are these numbers moving? This number went down, that number went up. What's going on here? But over time, within a year, within a 30-day time period, when these numbers are moving, it's like, yep, that policy did exactly what I expected it to do. The life insurance company did exactly what they said they were going to do, and I did exactly what I said I was going to do, at least at a minimum.
Yep.
And, you know, the comfort just goes up, and it's almost natural. Once you see and you have that experience, especially an experience like this, I mean, that's a lot of – those are a lot of challenges mm-hmm. being thrown at somebody. A lot of people couldn't necessarily recover from that, in my opinion. I mean, I've seen a lot of things. Everybody else has too. I get it. But it's like, can't really hardly wait to pay another premium or buy another policy. And I'm not encouraging anyone to go too fast or make decisions right. that you're not comfortable with or don't understand. I'm not saying that. I am saying, once you have the experience of paying premium with legitimate policy structured properly, whatever that means to you personally, with these mammoth life insurance companies that can back up the guarantees that they're making. And you see that, and then you compare that to, you know, the Rob or qualified accounts or stock this or whatever, all of the other things that are screaming for your capital. And you're looking at this and, wait a minute, this is doing this, and I don't have to worry about a renter. I don't have to worry about repairs. I don't have to worry about taxes. I don't have to – there's like no management.
Right. And I will go back to that early post-college of, you know, trying to be up – you know, I used to go to the library and check out the prospectus. And yeah. So they would show all of the – and I would study a company and try and know all the ins and outs of it. And I got a couple good ones. Like I got Oracle. I put $800 in Oracle back in the .com. It went up to $8,000. I took half of it out because I was going to college. And I really wish I took the other half. And then it started tanking. But I still pulled out at $1,200 after I'd pulled. So I made – I mean, there's an opportunity out there if you do your – but I just – I looked myself in the mirror and I said, you are not – like you don't have a dual career. Like you need to focus on being prepared in the OR. You need to be prepared at bettering yourself for your customers. You can't keep track of all of what's going on Wall Street. And then also kind of in the back of my mind feel like, you know, at the rate that an all-American individual can purchase a stock, a lot of the fun money has been filtered out before it hits Wall Street. So, you know, the same point is like I needed to simplify in that when you start having kids and, you know, it's like I just changed their diaper. What is going on? That just happened again. You're sitting there. You're like the Wall Street, all of the financial research kind of goes on the wayside of those individual companies. But you just don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So I think the thing is do your research. But when the noise comes, the things that I was encouraged by was look at the balance sheets for some of these major blue chip companies. They've got corporate owned life insurance. Oh, yeah. They've got banks have bank owned life insurance. So these companies who probably pay a lot of money to the other personalities that are anti whole life, they're doing the very same thing for their leadership team. They're buying whole life policies on their CEO. And when the CEO dies, that funds the death benefit goes back. So I think if you get worried that you're doing something that's, you know, not, you know, something funky or mad scientist, I mean, go back to the fact that whole life has been around before the tax code.
Yep.
And it's got some little, you know, there's some gremlins that have grown up that are trying to act like they're structured, you know, with a mutual company. But in reality is if you're working with an IBC person and you are budgeting and you're putting as much money as you can, you're not afraid to capitalize, you will be so thrilled at the simplicity of your life.
I agree. I'm glad you brought that up. The Coley, corporate-owned, Boley, bank-owned. Now, you think about that. These banks especially, you know, and the big banks do this too. It's not just your local bank. These big, big banks do this. And even if we go back to like A.L. Williams, who started, you know, A.L. Williams, another buy term and invest the difference multi-level marketing thing. And it's a long time ago, but they're still in existence today. But they sold, who bought them? Citigroup bought them. Mm-hmm. All right. So Citigroup bought A.L. Williams. A.L. Williams, buy term and invest the difference. Got a great story. Coach out of Georgia. Surely he's drinking martinis or Mai Tais off the coast somewhere. I don't know. Citibank owns them. So their promotion is to buy term and invest the difference. Oh, Citibank, I'm sure they have an investment arm too, right? They can cozy up and hook you up with the mutual funds, whatever. But then they turn around and buy hundreds of millions of dollars in life insurance. and it's Bowley. I mean, why aren't they buying hundreds of millions of dollars in term?
Yeah.
And they may be, I don't know, but they're buying more permanent whole life insurance than they are term if they're buying the term. It's like, you look over here, don't look over here. You do this, but don't look at what we're doing. And so, you know, thank you for sharing that. And why would a bank do that? Not only is there going to be a death benefit, you can't buy life insurance any other way, but that cash value is considered their tier one capital. They're not risking that. It's not at risk.
Right.
It's tier one capital. It's like, Now, we should act like that. Again, you know, it's act like your own bank. We can't print money out of thin air.
No. But,
you know, a life insurance company can't leverage. They can't print money out of thin air. So, which is, you know, you can talk philosophically about that all day long. Nelson said, banks lend money that doesn't exist, and that is evil, and I agree with him. So I can take the goodness, build my capital, tier one capital, right? It has a death benefit, deferred benefit in the future, and I'm not risking this.
Yeah. Right?
And therefore, I don't need to print money out of thin air and be evil either. So.
But yeah, there's a lot to get into. But at the same time, when that noise comes, you just have to ask yourself, well, why are they doing what we are all trying to do?
Anything you want to share, cover, closing?
No, I just think, you know, if they ever need to reach out, just let them know that they need to talk to somebody that was kind of a 1099 route and wanted to figure out how they could pay for things. You know, I wear out vehicles fairly quickly in my job, moving instruments and implants around, and, you know, be able to control the financing portion of that. That's a positive. And I just could go on how many positives there are, except for, you know, you still get, and I love what you guys are doing, because you still kind of get the eyebrow raises at parties. If you were to talk about whole life, but just know there's a lot of marketing working against the benefits that, you know, Sarah and I are experiencing.
I like he said earlier, I'm a fun guy to hang around, right? So, and I like to have fun sometimes more than others. If I want to engage or, you know, keep a conversation going, you know, somebody, which I avoid talking about what I do more than I talk about what I do. But I was talking to a doc the other day, and he's like, well, you know, what do you do, James? And I didn't really want to get into it, right? And I said, well, I write life insurance. He's like, oh, for who? And or for what company? Something like that. And I said, well, the best companies in North America. You know, I'm telling him I don't want to talk about it. Right? Without telling him I don't want to talk about it. But he kept going and kept going. And he was rather a robust physician, you know. And so anyway, we had a great conversation that ended up something like, I'm poking him in the stomach. I'm like, when's the last time you followed up with your cardiologist?
You know? Oh, no.
We had fun. It was all fun. But, you know, my point here is, you know, if I want to talk to somebody, you know, we're all the same.
Yep.
You know, I mean, if I don't want to talk to somebody very long, I'll just mention the word life insurance.
Yeah.
And they're like, phew.
Well, I think when I first started out, I didn't want to talk about it because I was not 100% sure it was going to work.
Sure.
But now it's kind of like, I'm okay talking about it. I don't get like super passionate. Like, you know, I've got to convert you to make you, because I think there's just so many different opportunities out there. You have to find the one that works for you. But I'm like, the control that we have, albeit small, the control we have is paramount to being able to do what you want to do and have a little bit of a peace of mind that you're planting seeds that are guaranteed by contract. And that's a big deal.
That's a big deal. And I got to say, it was very late in the day when I was talking to the gentleman. It wasn't just I didn't want to talk about life, and I didn't really want to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
Okay, Scott, thank you very much for coming in. And you know, making the time to come down here. Thank you.
I'll try and bring my beautiful bride next time.
Perfect. Perfect. Oh yeah. We'll try to do an event that's not aligned with her alumni's, you know, game.
That was a good game though. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, become a client and come to the next one. So we're going to go back to the same spot?
Probably. I like downtown Fort Worth. I'm a Fort Worth boy.
Yeah, it's easy.
So, and it's a pretty nice venue.
Yeah, and I think what the first one was at the Botanical Garden. Mm-hmm. I think I was coming in the same time as Janet, and I think I almost hit her. And I was like, well, that would be a good
driving in, you mean?
Driving in.
To the parking lot?
Oh. Yeah. So it was probably going to be my fault.
I hope so. Well, listen, if you see her, don't hit her.
Don't hit her.
Yeah, but it should be in October 2025. I mean, there's no reason. I don't think any reason why we shouldn't do another one. Mm-mm. Do you?
I think it's great.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.